Big show for you here today on the Fantasy Film Room as Nate Tice joins me to talk three trending topics, like literally in the news topics. Drake May, starting for the Patriots. Spencer Rattler, probably starting for the Saints. And Nico Collins is on IR. I mean, what a just what a terrible day to be alive. But what will happen in that offense in his absence? We also talk a deep sleeper on the Cowboys and our saying the quiet part out loud takes for the week. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, October 10th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is one hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, man?
Oh, not too much. A little fantasy film room. I always love continuing these from yesterday because then you give me some thoughts to marinate on. I didn't do much marinating last night because I'm a terrible cook anyways, but even my brain didn't marinate much last night. But this morning, it stewed on some thoughts, and I'm very excited to talk about those later today. And the topic that you're going to start the show with, I'm very excited to talk about. Always good to be here, though.
Oh, I mean, yeah, always good to have you. And absolutely, the NFL actually provided us with a lot of news to talk about today. But yeah, it's always good to continue the conversation we have on Football 301. If you guys are not listening to Football 301 with Nate, myself, and Nate and Charles on Thursdays, I'm taking it as a personal insult. So you should be listening to that podcast for sure. So please subscribe to wherever you get your podcast. Watch it on YouTube, the whole deal. We would appreciate it. I know if you like this show, you're going to like that show as well. But it was funny in preparation for this podcast today. I usually try to not totally overlap on topics. And I sent producer Colin the list of teams that we discussed yesterday. And he's like, oh, good. So you guys talked about all the big important teams in the NFL. Like, great. Yeah. So what the hell are you going to talk about on this show? I didn't have a great, idea in terms of a big picture topic, but like I said, the NFL provided us, I think, with three really fascinating storylines, one of which makes me want to, puke all of my guts out, but we'll get to that one last. We'll start with, again, three topics here that we're going to dive into on the Fantasy Film Room. Usually it is a bigger picture topic. I think these are all big picture topics here in the first segment. In the second half of the show, Nate talks about the things that he's nerding out about. We say the quiet part out loud, and then we preview Thursday Night Football. So, Nate, let's get into these three storylines here. The first two, we got some rookie quarterbacks taking the reins of their offense, one by choice, one by injury. Let's start with your guy, Nate Tice. Drake May is the new starting quarterback of the New England Patriots. I actually have a lot of thoughts about this decision to start Drake May, which I'll get into. But of course, you are the Drake May guy. If people don't know this, Nate had Drake May as his 1A, Caleb as his 1B quarterback. I think I'm doing that justice by
you did. Thank you. You didn't say 1-2. I had to keep clarifying. You can like more than one player in the draft. I want people to realize that.
Brother, as somebody that fights the battle that you can like two receivers on the same team, because it's like, well, you like Ayuk, you must hate Samuel. No. We like them both. We like all. So you can do.
So
this
you hate
for
DJ
sure.
Moore because you like Roman Dunze, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've only been caping up for DJ Moore like since he was drafted. But yeah, no. So Nate, big Drake May fan. Of course, we know this is an interesting, I'll put it interesting offensive environment here in New England. But with change, Nate Tice, sometimes comes opportunity with new players rising up here. So again, I'll get into my thoughts about this decision, but I want to hear just generally, what do people need to know about Drake May, the player?
He's a walking, talking big play. And that is why I liked him. He has a lot of more polish than I thought he got credit for through the draft process. I think a narrative kind of got out of control about his footwork and act like he could never take a snap. But really, he was more mentally advanced than you would think. That's why I'm pretty optimistic about how he can handle this offense even early on in his career. But he is big. He's athletic. He's got a strong arm. He's willing to push the ball. You even saw in his little short stint against the Jets on Thursday night when they were getting slaughtered, he's still standing in the pocket, throwing something over the middle. But the thing about him, and this even got kind of misconstrued in the draft process, is that he is a heck of an athlete, an excellent athlete. Like, he's faster than Caleb. He's a better scrambler than Caleb. Caleb does a little bit more runaround stuff and has great balance. But May is an outstanding athlete. He had an over 10% scramble rate, which sometimes is like can be a double-edged sword for me. But, you know, Jane Daniels' number dwarfed that, so it didn't stand out as much as Mays did.
Right.
But he's an excellent runner. And that, even for fantasy purposes, I'll just drop the stat of why I'm interested in this game, is the Texans run a ton of man coverage on third and fourth down. If receivers aren't getting open, if they're running all these blitz lanes and scramble lanes, you saw so many quarterbacks already scramble on this defense, including Caleb Williams, even though he got sacked a few times. Drake May can run. The Texans give up the most EPA to scrambles in the entire NFL. Ooh. So right there, I think we got some rushing production coming this weekend, because I also think it's going to be chaotic a little bit. He's going to probably tuck some. A lot of guys probably aren't going to get open against Derek Stingley. As much as I like some of the receivers, they are not, none of them are a true ace. As much as I think Jalen Polk will be a good two, I don't think there's that ace. So I think there's going to be a lot of running here. But May, he could be accurate over the middle. He can push. He's going to try and fire posts. He's going to try and fire digs. He's going to try and fire all the big boy routes. There's some accuracy stuff when he throws left, and especially short. But he's, that's the thing they've worked the most on with him. But it's all the other stuff that makes him so exciting. And that's why I'm excited to see him. He's going to be one of those guys, he'll get caught with a pick because he's going to try some stuff. Or he's going to get caught with a sack because he's going to try some stuff. But his sack mitigation is pretty good for how creative he is and how strong he is and how much stuff that he likes to do outside of structure. So smart player, really talented. I thought that he would be more ready to play than others did. And I think the Patriots really, some of this, and I asked some people behind the scenes there in New England. I know a couple people there. And I asked them, I was like, is he doing well in practice or is this kind of a thing? They're like, no, he's been freaking awesome in practice. That's why this happened. The receivers are getting a little antsy going, hey, I know we're not great, but I'm getting open there. And Jacoby's not pushing the ball. And Jacoby's a safer quarterback. And even watching that Dolphins game last week, I reviewed the tape. Some of the pressure numbers, people got to get some context here. The Patriots run a lot of empty. They run a lot of seven-step dropbacks. That's going to invite pressure just by natural numbers. They are not a good offensive line. We've talked about this plenty. But the numbers everyone's throwing out there and saying like, wow, this is the worst offensive line we've ever seen. Hold your horses. It's just, it's not great, but it's not bad. I mean, it's bad, but it's not the worst thing we've ever seen in our entire lives. I think May is going to mitigate it way better than Jacoby was able to, because Jacoby is just a below average athlete and May is an excellent athlete. So I think the running will be there right away fantasy wise, and then the throws will come and go. I think there are going to be some highlights, but I'm sure he'll get caught once or twice because this Texans defense is pretty dang good and fast. And so that's kind of where I think maybe he'll get caught once or twice, but I'm pretty excited. I think it's not the easiest landing spot for a rookie quarterback, but I do think he's going to give them some interesting, more options that are out of structure that'll create some yards for them. He's an explosive play. That's what they need. That's truly what this offense needs so badly.
Desperately. So many good threads to pull on there. Starting with, Houston's given up the 12th most fantasy points to quarterbacks this year, and that seems odd when you first think about it, because they have Derek Stingley, Kamari Lassiter is playing well at the other corner spot, and they have two great pass rushers. I think they lead the NFL in pressures this year to the Houston Texans. So it's like, why is this team giving up so many fantasy points to quarterbacks? Well, you mentioned it. It is that scrambling there. And that's why talking about Drake May is so critical, because I think because his athleticism is not overstated by many people, and because he's like a white dude, we're not talking about the fact that like, oh, he could be like, I'm not going to say he's the next Josh Allen or anything like that, but he could bring you some real rushing juice. And from a fantasy quarterback perspective, that matters. He's 3% rostered in Yahoo leagues right now. I think that, not many people in single quarterback leagues like really truly need a quarterback, right? But super flex, things like that, that needs to obviously get jacked up. And generally, I do think that if he does run, he's going to get in the mix, for like DFS and stuff like that. From a fantasy perspective, he's going to be somebody that we care about. And I think, again, that'll be interesting to watch this week. Before we talk again about some of these receivers and stuff like that, I just have to get one thing off my chest that is driving me a little bit crazy about this. Like, the amount of people I've seen losing their mind about like, well, how can you start him this week against the Texans? It's like, I so just annoying. I just said, like, lead the NFL in pressures and all that. Yo, it's one game. Like, he's not going to go out there and literally die. You know, which I don't think this is going to happen, but if he was to be, I don't know, somehow mentally broken by one game against the Houston Texans pass rush, like that was going to break him. Well, he wasn't going to work out anyways. And I don't think that's going to happen. Like, This is one game. In the big picture of things, who cares if he's starting his first game against the Texans? What are you going to just, you're going to do the Hulk, the like push it down the road? Well, okay, we can't do it this week, but I guess we could do it against Jacksonville. But yo, they do have Josh Hines Allen and they do have Trayvon Walker and they have, they kind of push the pocket around. Oh, week eight against the Jets. No, I can't do that. They got Quinnen Williams. Oh yeah, Tennessee Titans defense playing pretty well. Like, oh, the Bears front. We can't do
Jeffrey
that.
Simmons.
Let's just go ahead and wait till week 11. Against the Rams. Oh, but Jared Verse is kind of playing really good football. Like, you could keep doing this and kicking the can down the road, down the road, and down the road. And then at some point, the other players on the roster, as you brought up, do know what's going on here. And I think that Jacoby Brissett is a good backup quarterback. Yep. I think some folks have maybe gotten a little over their skis about how good Jacoby Brissett is based on him.
They looked at some Browns EPA numbers and I
just about to say that, like just about to say, cause I've said those stats before, but yo, that Browns offense behind that line with Amari Cooper and obviously not the Browns line now, but back Chubb, then and Nick Chubb and the play, all that stuff, very different than whatever's going on in New England. Like I have said all along, we got to throw this guy out there at some point because he can create plays for you. And Jacoby Brissett is not going to create plays for you. So I had to get that off my chest because it's been driving me crazy. Just like, do you want his first start to be against the Texans? I guess not. I guess that's not ideal, but it's not going to destroy him for this to be his first start. You got to get the train rolling at some point. Like the dude needs to play. And they need what he brings to the table. So I'm not going to say this is going to be the first game I'm going to put on, you know, my big TV here or something like that on Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern, but it's certainly one that I want to rewatch at some point.
It gets the monitor for me. That's the number. I got the multi-screen on my TV, and then I usually have two games individualized, like, you know, just separated. It'll get the monitor. So it's game two for me.
Yeah. By the way, we literally have the same setup. I have the four on the multi TV, the like main one that I'll put one game that I want to see, and then this monitor gets turned around to that couch over there. And if there's another game I really want to see, like Browns Commanders, then I'll put that on another laptop and try to just, I don't know, mainline as much football as possible.
And people will go, "Oh, you didn't hear that commentary because I mute them all." And then only one I'll have is Red Zone Channel on. I'll have it on my laptop, but not like watching it, but the sound's playing. So I'll go like, "Oh shoot, I should watch that game." Like if I'm not watching the game. And so I know something's going on if I'm not watching, staying. That's why I get frustrated sometimes where I'm like, "You guys missed an entire drive when someone like throws a pick in the red zone." It's like they had 10 good plays before that. Just stay off. Some of the frustrations come from that. I will say, May, and this came up in the draft process too, was that his redshirt freshman, they want Sam Howell was there. Speaking of Sam Howell, we were talking about before the show. And was a established starter in North Carolina. May came in, big recruit, was going to go to Alabama, lost the 2020 season. I think he was a COVID recruit as well, but then switched commitment to North Carolina. He's a North Carolina legacy, very athletic family and all that. They wanted to play him his true freshman year because he was so talented, and then Howell's Howell, so they redshirted him because you can do that more now. We're four games, yada, yada. And then wins ACC player of the year, redshirt freshman, and all that. Then there was a drop-off in talent. In North Carolina, people were trying to make out his receiver that the Ravens drafted was like a first Tez rounder Walker, at some point.
Oh,
Tez Walker. And if anyone watched, I was like, that guy does not know how to play football. And I can't believe he's the guy people are highlighting as his talented teammate. The running back's pretty good, but
no quarterback, I think, probably had a bigger case of whiplash going from your number one receiver being Josh Downs to freaking Tez Walker.
Eight games of Tez Walker. Yeah. I know. Cause he was suspended to start too. That's from transfer rules and stuff, but the offensive line in North Carolina and the offensive coordinator left a lot to be desired. Mm-hmm. And why I'm saying that, I actually, Alex Van Pelt's like the classic B- OC to me. Like everything he runs is like staples of the NFL, so I have no qualms with anything he runs because I'm like, yeah, those rules are good. It's just creativity is a little so that's kind of where I'm at with it. But he's used to kind of uninspiring surroundings. Mm-hmm. Like he's not going from Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State, not knocking any quarterback that came from there, but he is used to stuff flying around him, having to perform at, like throw the ball as he's getting hit. So it's not as foreign to him as maybe some other guys. Also, this was some of my argument with Will Levis. Not I want to bring up, but that was like, he actually might get used to an NFL pocket because he gets smacked every single play. And maybe those kind of smacked him silly a little too much entering the NFL. This would be the last thing I kind of have on. This is more of a maybe an advantage the Patriots offense does have against this Texans defense is that they love to be in 12 personnel with two tight ends. The Texans, and this is kind of specific, but a lot of teams are doing it against them. They're 26th in passing success rate against 12 personnel.
Interesting.
And they've let an explosive play on a quarter of those passes. So 31 dropbacks. That is what, 19, 27. So yeah, seven of those, eight of those are explosive plays. And that is like why I'm curious of like what, because this is what they're going to lean into anyways. So I think there is going to be a shot play potential. You want to get those safeties moving upwards, Jalen Petrie and everything moving, going every which way. So I'm curious if they do get to one of those shot plays because May's going to push it. And maybe this is a, you know, Baker or Javon Baker's in there. Somebody, one of these young guys are in there taking the top off the defense. So I'm curious. I would say if I had to predict something, look for a shot, like a big, big shot play from this Texans or from this Patriots offense and look for May running around a little bit.
Yeah. Well, interesting note, just and this, you mentioned Alex Van Pelt, like kind of how he came from Cleveland and a lot of, again, the Jacoby Brissett crossover here, of like staple concepts. And I agree with you. When I watch the Patriots from like an offensive standpoint, it's not like they're doing anything where I'm just like, this sucks or anything, but they're also not doing anything. It's like, man, I can't wait to rewatch that, you know, like, and really break that down or anything, you know? So I just pretty staple NFL stuff. Jacoby Brissett is only 16.9% of his dropbacks have been play action so far. Really low play action rate, which is interesting because that should be talked about like a staple of this offense. Hasn't really been. I do wonder if they have like maybe a different plan for Drake May when he's back there, because the run game's been pretty good in New England. At least like Ramondre Stevenson has been a productive player this year. Antonio Gibson's had some moments. I feel like they could lean into that play action a little bit more, especially I mentioned this with Sal Vetri on the show yesterday. I expect like a lot of the stuff that Flacco did in this Browns offense, you know, that seems to fit Drake May really well, like boot out of the pocket and like let that big man launch that thing down the field. That would be something to consider if you're the Patriots coaching staff putting that in the mix here. Because, yeah, 16.9% play action rate. Only Geno Smith, Bryce Young, and Kirk Cousins are lower in terms of guys who have taken 20% of their team dropbacks. Like that
Cousins
is.
Cousins that low, too, is crazy.
Oh, yeah. Cousins is at 14.3 lowest in the NFL. Crazy. The only one close to him is, yeah, like Geno Smith and Bryce Young. So, again, I think that could be something that we see maybe a little bit of a difference there with Drake May. Want to talk about Jalen Polk, who I think you and I both liked as a player.
Yeah.
The last 2 weeks, he's run a route on 84.2% of the dropbacks, most of on the team. He has a 45.2% air yard share, which is not really, I think, Jalen Polk's game. He's not really like a vertical dude. He also has, and somebody brought this up to me, like he's a high like contested target rate. This is one of those situations where I think quarterback, offensive environment, like timing, all that can really, and role and where you're getting the ball can influence your contested target rate more so than your actual separation skills. I think Polk would be a great fit on some of those big crossing routes on play action.
Yes.
So he is definitely somebody. He's 8% rostered in Yahoo right now. He is definitely someone I think like worth sticking on the end of your bench just to see what happens if these guys have a connection.
Yeah, Polk to me was that intermediate body. Like he's good on digs. I'm just trying to remember from, oh my god, all I felt like at Washington was a lot of sail routes too and some overs and stuff, but the thing is that's all the stuff that May loves to fire. And there's the rookie connection, like if you're following the Patriots and stuff like that, like or just any of these rookie quarterbacks, you could tell right away, you know, Caleb Williams and Roman Dunes, they were BFF right away, you know, and so they have a little bit of chemistry. It's really coming on, actually. But then Jane Daniels and Terry McLaurin, BFF right away, it seems like. And then right here in New England, because they were going with Jacoby to start, and even at the end of the camp, even Gerard Mayo's going like, yeah, May's been better for the last couple of weeks. So, it's all the signs have been there that they want to play him, but they've just been trying to find this landing spot. But all during camp, early camp, it was May working with Jalen Polk and Baker. Mm-hmm. Jalen Polk and Baker, the two rookie receivers. And so I just think there is some of that natural chemistry that you get in practice. Me as the backup quarterback in college, backup all the tight ends, I had such chemistry with all the tight ends because Russell got to throw at the receivers. All right, Tice, you go throw at the tight ends and running backs. And guess who has some chemistry with James White, Jacob Pettersson, who was Big Ten tight end of the year? Incredible. Yeah, I did, but none of the receivers, though, because they didn't trust me with that. But I am saying that there is some kind of that natural reps that get built up here.
Totally.
So, yeah. No, I think the run game is real, though. Like, it's not watching against the Dolphins, it's like that's a sustainable run game. It's not the sexiest thing in the world. They run two runs basically. But it is a real thing, and that's going to, you can do that against this Texans defense. It's something that the Bills should have kept doing. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, we dove in more of the passing game yesterday, but even kind of watching it, they should have stuck with that run game and being bully ball. That's what the Patriots want to do anyway. So I think they do have some more answers than you originally think, starting a rookie quarterback with one of the worst offensive lines in the league against, I think, the fifth best defense by DVOA right now in the Texans. But I actually feel more optimistic. Like, I'm like 5% optimistic, as opposed to like -5. It seems like everybody else is in football media right now. A lot of Patriots offensive line takes. I still remain. I don't see any clips. No one posts any clips, but everyone has a lot of takes on the Patriots offensive line. So just something to keep an eye on.
something to note. The Patriots rank 17th in rushing success rate. So nothing sexy, nothing crazy, but yeah, it's a fundamentally sound run game with a guy with the back in Ramondre Stevenson, who I do think his workload's a little questionable from a fantasy perspective, but I still think that he is like a good running back too, in my opinion. And I do think Polk is a guy to stick on the end of your benches. So yeah, Drake May will be interesting. There's definitely a non-0% chance if he takes off running, you know, 6-7 times. Like, we are talking about him as a waiver wire quarterback for teams that need it. But again, he is not the only rookie quarterback that's potentially going to be starting this week. It was reported yesterday by multiple outlets that Spencer Rattler has a good shot to start for the New Orleans Saints. And Nate, you and I talked Saints very briefly on Football 301 yesterday, kind of having the tone of like, yeah, this sucks because it just feels like the first 2 weeks of the season feels like a different lifetime. I know that's what I said. I will say the prospect of Spencer Rattler starting and not, you know, no disrespect to Jake Haener, but, you know, Spencer Rattler being the guy like to start makes me a little bit more interested in a multi-week absence for Derek Carr. So this is a team, you know, we don't have a ton of fantasy stars to talk about on the damn Patriots, but there are people that we care about on this Saints offense. Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, Alvin Kamara. What can we expect, like, if Spencer Rattler is suddenly just dropped into this mix?
Oh, man. He's not a runner. I'll say that. Dude, he has one of the most natural arms, like talented arms that you'll ever watch. Like, dude can just spin that football. He is another guy that's willing to push the ball. He's another guy that's willing to take take hits in the pocket and stand in there and fire and deliver. He had to do it a lot at South Carolina the last year. Their offensive line was just woeful. Mm-hmm. But he is going to stand. I'm sure they'll make it safer. Again, this is the Kubiak offense. I always feel like I'm repeating myself talking about the Saints offense. It's like, yeah, it's the same formula.
Yeah.
They're going to run zone. They're going to run boot. And they're going to run a lot of overs and posts. And if that doesn't work, or if they get a bad game script, that's it. But he has the arm to keep pushing it. I think he throws a better deep ball than Derek Carr. I know that's like, I think it's more of a Derek's deep ball. I don't know. Some of them are performative.
It depends. It depends on the throw.
He just
right?
throws it. It's like there's three defenders there, and I'm like, you just predetermined that you're throwing that. And Rattler, maybe it's more of a natural deep ball. Like, he is more inclined to throw it. Like, it's part of his football dogma. Maybe more than Derek's.
And you gotta incentivize Carr to do that, right?
It's yes,
like, we are, that's why the Rashid Shaheed's shot plays work so well, because it's like, hey, we're gonna get this pre-snap look and you're gonna just launch that post route to this guy, and he
no thought
that I think you can, and if it's blocked up well and all that, and like conceptually it's gonna, he knows it's gonna be open, I think you can, that's why he likes those deep shots, whereas the, you know, maybe Chris Olave boundary deep shots he doesn't love as much, except on the one play on Monday night that got called, like, was not even a real play, of course,
and everyone cried. I saw it instantly. It's like, Olave, no.
It was me crying.
Yeah, that was you. That was what I heard. I heard that a million voices scream out. I would say I think the positives I would say is that you don't have to nudge Rattler to throw deep or to push the ball. If it's going to be clean, and I think he, in the preseason, he looked like he had a good handle on the offense. I know that's preseason compared to a regular season game plan, but it wasn't like his head was spinning where I'm like, yeah, this guy's going to need some time. He was like ready. He felt comfortable back there, as comfortable as a day three rookie can look.
Right.
And I don't think confidence has ever been Spencer Rattler's something that he was worried about with Spencer Rattler. But so again, why I'm saying all this, he's going to give him chances. There's going to be, even though it's Todd Bowles' defense, I think that if he feels comfortable, which I think he will more than most rookies that are dropped in like this, that He's going to try it. He's going to try to push it to Olave or Shahid. It might not be as functional down to down as Derek Carr, because Derek, you know, obviously has more experience and probably it's going to be a little bit more understanding against Bulls. But he's got a live arm. So if you really need one, like, there might be some explosive plays to be had with him, even if he's going to take some sacks, though. I will say that. But those don't dingy in fantasy. So
maybe they should.
They give you more yards to pick up.
Like, obviously, from a fantasy perspective, I don't think anybody's starting Spencer Rattler. But like, why we're intrigued by this, or at least I'm intrigued by this, Tampa Bay, their secondary is a mess. They've given this up the second most fantasy points to quarterbacks this year. That's who the Saints play in week six. Obviously, if you watched Thursday Night Football last week, Kirk Cousins threw for 500 bills on this team. So like, yeah, I feel I was getting very upset about the idea of like, man, this could be a potentially really interesting fantasy game because I like the Bucks. It could be a shootout here. Their offense looks really good. And then, oh, damn, like, we're just going to get Jake Haener starting against this Bucks defense. But now that it's Rattler and a guy that, like, again, he is not a perfect prospect at all, but he does have a live arm and he's aggressive and all this stuff, I'm at least interested here and like not completely giving up hope on my Saints players, you know. And Olave obviously coming off a 2-catch 10-yard game, super frustrating. I've heard that hamstring injury that he's playing through is really like dogging him. It's a tough one, and I feel like they just kind of sacrificed him to Trent McDuffie on Monday night, just like, all right, we're just going to take the L here and try to get the ball to Mason. I mean, they're just so light at pass catcher, period. It's Olave, it's Shahid, and it's nobody else. So I don't know. Shahid obviously super boom bust, and it's weird because I almost kind of want to just see what it looks like 1 week with Rattler before playing any of these guys. It's just such an enticing matchup here, so we'll see. I still overall like the structure. I like the structure of the offense, even if it is going to be more of like a bad defense merchant type of offense, right? Like, we talked about that yesterday, where good defenses can still, like, they know what they're doing here. But the Bucks in week six, if Rattler's still starting by like week 9, week 10 against the Panthers and the Falcons, like, we could be cooking here. But there's some games in here against like the Broncos that might not look so good. So not totally willing to give up my hope on Saints players right now.
It's boom bust is the best way to describe all of this. Shahid, Spencer Rattler, the whole offense, especially going against Bulls, because it's just the that's what his blitz happy nature, especially with a rookie quarterback.
Oh yeah,
that's what he's going to be. You know, so that's, but that, if you blitz a lot, you leave your opportunities to be gashed. So there might be a couple spots there, but it's all feels so boom bust. But just to speak to Rattler's talent, I think I had him 50th overall on my big board, or 52, somewhere around there. And I had him over Bo Nix. I thought Rattler had more, I both as a high-end backup, a chance to be a starter is how I grade that. That's kind of the grading system I go with that kind of late second, early third QB grade. But that is how I pictured him. I think he has more throwing talent than Bo Nix did, just with his arm and everything and willingness to push the ball. So that is, I just want to kind of like drop that tidbit in here. I consider Rattler more in line with Nix and Penix than maybe where he ended up in the draft, and those guys ended up in the draft.
I wish Eric McCoy was playing at center for this game.
Yeah, I do.
That's
too,
for sure.
Yeah.
All right, final storyline that we got from the NFL. Nico Collins has been placed on IR. He's going to miss at least 4 games. I didn't even like saying the words as they came out of my mouth. I hated it. Nico Collins obviously was drafted at wide receiver 13. He has been the wide receiver 2 overall this year. Pretty sick. Pretty good freaking football player. He's not going to play the next 4 games. Nate, I know you told me yesterday that you were writing about CJ Stroud for the site. Yeah. So I think this is a good time to talk about just the Texans offense overall, and just sort of what to make of it without Nico Collins, because CJ Stroud, it's worth noting, last year did elevate, you know, like Noah Brown when Nico Collins missed time. And I think there were some pretty bad Nico Collins is replaceable takes after this. I will never forget those. I still remember who said it. But you know, there's Noah Brown playing the Nico Collins role. Okay, let's calm down.
Nico Collins.
I don't know that anybody's gonna be playing the damn Nico Collins role in this offense, but we do have obviously some other big name receivers here. Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell, Xavier Hutchinson got a lot of playing time. He's a second year receiver. I have some thoughts about Tank Dell that I shared on the podcast, just how I think he's playing this year. To me, I don't know if you disagree with me, Nate, but I don't think he looks like the same player this year. You can clearly see he's coming back from a serious injury. That's how this stuff happens. He also was shot in the freaking offseason. So a lot going on with Tank Dell. He could get right at any time. He's kind of the big variable here without Nico, but just what do we expect with this whole unit without Nico Collins?
Stroud's going to keep chucking it, and I think Diggs, of course, would be the natural beneficiary of all of this, which I don't think I'm breaking new ground in saying that. But watching Hutchinson step into the Nico Collins role, which is the X in this offense, that Stroud didn't shy away from attacking there. Like, he was like, hey, the look's bringing me there, and I'm a machine right now. Along with the reigning MVP in Baltimore, like, Stroud has big of an MVP case as anybody right now. I think he's like the third favorite, so I'm not like going really crazy here.
Sure.
But that's kind of what the gist of my article that's coming out tomorrow is that this guy is playing probably the best football anybody in the league right now. And it's real. I mean, even with two turnovers last week, it was just still the Texans are a sub 500 team without CJ Stroud, which is, of course, every starting quarterback, but not even sub 500. They might be like a 4-win team because of what that run game is and how Stroud is able to just make it work in the passing game. Doesn't matter who he's throwing to. That's why I think, yeah, you want Diggs, or if you have Tank Dell, maybe they get him going a little bit more. They designed some stuff for him last week. They had like a bootleg to him that got extended. Stroud hit him. So they're trying to, maybe he's feeling a little better. Yeah. Now I think it's like, all right, now we really got to ramp you up. But I think Hutchinson is interesting. I wasn't huge on him as a prospect, even though I like my big receivers. It's in this offense and Stroud's willingness to chuck it to a bigger guy in that X role, break all those in breaking routes. Like, he is a deep, deep, deep flyer I'm willing to take on, take maybe if I need it. But I don't think Stroud, it's hard to talk about both sides of my mouth because it's like, yeah, yes, the offense is going to be dang without Nico Collins. I think both of us were going like, this guy's the offensive player of the year, like, so far, or one of the candidates for it. And so that's, yeah, that's going to be incredibly hard to drop, to take away. But I do think that Stroud is one of the best guys to mitigate it. So like, Stroud, I don't think will get dinged as much. I think they still don't have a run game. They still are going to be chucking it. And I still think he's comfortable chucking it no matter who it is. I think Dell will come along. We talked about it, and I heard you talk about, like, on earlier this week, I believe I saw a clip from it where you were talking about, like, this is not the same guy, kind of the same thing you were saying right there. I would agree with that. This is like 85% Dell. But I thought last week looked more, oh, okay, this is how I pictured you this year, and going against the Bills. So maybe he keeps ramping up because of necessity and all that. And I think this is actually smart by the Texans rather than just going, hey, let's try rest Nico for 1 week and bring him back in 2 weeks. And then he pops his hammy again.
Yeah,
hey, totally. IR, 4 weeks, rest it up. Okay, we'll get you in a month. Also kind of maybe speaks to their confidence they have in the other guy. So I'm still comfortable with Stroud. Like, I really am. Maybe I'm talking myself into it, but I watched that game the last 2.5 quarters. Yes, they had the turnovers, but that wasn't like Stroud. One of them was a defender making a great play. One of them was a pass rush. It wasn't a receiver effing up, and it wasn't Stroud's progress that effed it up. So that's why I'm still optimistic about it. Which receiver I'm throwing the dart at, though, is a different story, but it's probably Diggs is the safest bet. But I am saying that Hutchinson is an interesting deep, deep guy to like maybe fill in for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, just in terms of routes run, according to fantasy points data in this game, 32 for Stephon Diggs, 30 for Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz, 28, Xavier Hutchinson, 24. He was definitely the wide receiver 3. Robert Woods, 8, and then Nico Collins, oh God, this makes me sad every single time. He had 4, and then John Metchie only ran 1 route. Like, he's not in the mix here at all.
He's a dirty work guy for them. So, like, he's never going to be a fantasy guy. He's a better real-life football player than a fantasy guy. He's just a dirty – what's his face? Noah Brown.
Yeah,
like,
right.
They're very similar, actually. And then KJ Osborne. Like, yeah, all those guys
all
are
those
like,
guys, same
they're all cut from the same cloth. Yeah.
100%. And with Hutchinson, it's interesting because, like, I go back, I'm looking at my his prospect profile and reception perception. I kind of thought he'd be more of like an Alan Lazard type of big body, like interior receiver. So I wonder if now that they know going into this game, they're not going to have Nico, like they've wanted Stephon Diggs and they've used him as their slot guy and their like layup target player. But he does have a ton of experience playing as a perimeter X receiver. And he's not the vertical threat that, I mean, certainly not the vertical threat that Nico Collins is right now, and he's definitely not the vertical threat that he was in his prime. That was the big drop off last year in his RP profile, was he just didn't get open down the field as much. I wonder if maybe, though, again, week to prepare, this is definitely going to be a smaller ball offense without Nico Collins one way or another. Maybe we see Diggs kick outside a little more and Hutchinson kind of do some slot receiver stuff, because Dell is too small to be like a full-time slot receiver. It's weird to say that. Like, you think
times have changed, man.
Yeah, right, exactly. You'd think the alternative, but like the Texans are already having enough trouble running the ball. They certainly don't want their 170-pound receiver who's coming off an injury trying to fit the run out there. That's how he got hurt, was blocking on the damn
who got
run.
Hurt doing the same right thing. I will say Tank Dell just man, if he was 190 pounds, he's like the best receiver in the league. There's another play this game, it was a short yardage play they had against the Bills, and Stephon Diggs is looking for excuses not to block. And Tank Dell, who coming off the injury, like you said, 170 pounds soaking wet, is in there trying to block up the safety. And I was like, Tank, if I was the coach, I'd be like, I appreciate that. You didn't need to do that.
Yeah, like, thanks, but no thanks, brother. Yeah, let's save that.
Yes, I'd like Stephon to be more like you, but actually that's the vet move, what he's doing.
That's why, I mean, I've always said that about Diggs. He just does the little, like, the hand thing.
All the
like,
hand
we're doing the hand. I'm blocking you. Yeah. Like, let's kick him out to the outside. And Xavier Hutchinson, 6'2", 203. Like, he is at least a big body. That's why I like that Alan Lazard.
I love that Lazard comp. That is fantastic. That's exactly what he is.
If you look at their route charts, like, well, number one, neither one of them are great separators, but like it's a lot of the just short and intermediate stuff. So I feel like he's someone, like, it's a deep flyer. We don't need to be picking him up off waivers, something like that. But somebody that you could at least monitor in that regard. So I don't know. Interesting player. I think didn't they both go to Iowa State too?
Who's that? Hutchinson and who?
Hutchinson and Lazard, right? Well, yeah. I mean, Hutchinson. They're both Iowa State. That is. Look at that. Basically the same.
Scout
player.
The helmet.
Yeah. Right. I didn't know I was doing it, but yes.
I just don't picture Lazard as an Iowa State guy for whatever reason in my head. That's nobody. He is an Iowa State.
Now you know
guy,
who he really reminds me of is Hakeem Butler. No, but on a serious note.
Oh my God. That's funny you say that, because when I saw Xavier Hutchinson, I was watching the game, my brain went to Hakeem Butler and I was like, oh, he's still around. And then I was like, oh no, this is the different guy. This is a different big body guy that's over there.
Wasn't Hakeem Butler actually the offensive player of the year in the XFL this past year? I'm pretty sure he was.
He was like a monster. He's just dunking on guys.
A lot of the deep dynasty bros were satisfied by finally seeing their.
I was right before I dove into media.
He was very hyped up that year.
He was very hyped up, wasn't he? I remember that.
Anyways, not that we need to go down Hakeem Butler memory lane, but yeah, I think that's kind of again with Tank Dell, he's somebody that, like, I'm glad you said this, because I haven't watched the film back from that game yet either, but it's like, if he's starting to get ramped up, that's a good sign, because I said this on the Panic Meter podcast, like, he's somebody that right now I do feel like is in that coping corner zone where it's just, he's, you drafted him, he's not going to give you that because of the injury, but like that, it could flip any time. I always come back to the conversation I had with Tony Pollard at the Super Bowl, where he's like, I was not myself until week 11. And like, that could be the case with Tank Dell. Who knows? But in the meantime, yeah, Xavier Hutchinson and that role is definitely something to monitor. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about what Nate is nerding out about right after this. All right, we're back. Nate, what are you nerding out about this week? I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about this player.
Yeah, my guy. The Cowboys offense is a peculiar type of offense right now. I'm really trying to figure it out. Really trying to get a handle on it. I like Dak. I like CeeDee Lamb. What else we got? All right, so not talking about Jalen Tolbert. The run game. It's had a little bit more moments in the last few weeks, but still not something they're really leaning on. But a guy that keeps getting more snaps, and he is kind of a zoomer slash here, because he's like a running back, a fullback, a tight end for this team. That's Hunter. And I want to say it's Lepke, but it might be Lipke. But he is. I know. Someone said, they said, see, this is what messes me up. When I listen to commentary and they say two different names, and then my brain just goes, which one is it? I'm going to mess it up. So Hunter Lepke, I'm going to go with that. But he is a second-year guy, I believe, out of North Dakota State. Just a good player, and one that Lipke, thank you, Colin, Hunter Lipke. But this is a guy that is, they are going to find, they're finding more touches for him. And I think because they trust him getting the ball and on handoffs, that this might be a natural solution for them, them being the Cowboys, in finding that someone that they can give 5 to 7 touches in the ground game, maybe even more, as they realize, you know, Zeke is not the Zeke that left Dallas, and, you know, the other Enrico is kind of okay. But I think Hunter is going to start getting more and more touches. He also is a good receiver that they use as a straight tight end at times. And I think because they like getting into more tight end heavy looks, I mean, they're also introducing another guy that they have. All they do is they have the best tight end strategy ever. Just get Big Ten tight ends.
Yeah.
Done. And they get them, like, they have more playable tight ends over the last 5 years, the Cowboys, that some teams have not found a tight end in like a decade.
Yeah.
And like they just churn out the same guy. It's the same body type too. But anyways, but this guy, Hunter Lipke, is just, they're trying to find ways to use him. Mm-hmm. So this is why I'm a little like, maybe, you know, a deeper league guy that I'm trying to snatch up, just in case if they start seeing him more as a true tailback that can get some real touches. I think how the Vikings use CJ Ham is kind of a comparison, but I think Hunter is more talented than that. And I think that's why, again, they need this. The Vikings have other players they can give the ball. So they don't need CJ Ham. They get a carry last week, of course, as I say that. But I think this, if I'm looking for a solution in the Cowboys backfield, this is Hunter Lipke is going to be that guy. But it might just, it's a dart throw for me, totally, as far as a fantasy analysis. But this is real. He's getting more snaps. He had a little less last week, but they're finding ways to get him on the field, which then usually means, okay, now he's on the field. Now let's get him touches because we can trust him on the field. Just kind of following, reading in between the lines of his play right now. So he's just a good player. So even in non-fantasy terms, just watch number 40 for the Cowboys. That is just a really good football player who's really enjoyable to watch because he's all over the field, making, just doing a lot of little things for that offense. And he's pretty good with the ball in his hands.
Because the last 2 weeks, snaps in terms of the Cowboys backfield, 62 for Rico Dowdle, team high, 47 for Hunter Lipke, and then Zeke Elliott is third, 32. Little Deuce Vaughn's got 3 snaps there as well, so shout out to Deuce Vaughn for that.
Shout out to Deuce.
Hunter Lipke is, you know, the distant third in terms of rush attempts, but he's run a team high 24 routes among the running backs. So, you know, he's only got 3 targets on those, but still that's the same that Rico Dowdle has in the last 2 games. So I think it's an interesting conversation, one, because we always want to know, like, you know, knock on wood, the whole thing, running backs, the like, clarity comes when injury and chaos hits and like somebody gets removed here, the pie gets smaller, who takes on the bigger slice. So obviously that's important to know, especially as we get past bye weeks at some point, like if anything ever happens in one of these backs, Lipke could be a guy that's, yeah, like a deeper type play, something like that. But really also it's important to kind of ask this question about Rico Dowdle, who I definitely think is a big fantasy conversation right now, because we, much like you, Nate, we're all looking for clarity in this Cowboys offense. You and I talked a lot about the passing game on Football 301 and how I came away from that film really encouraged by Tolbert's performance, but also the way that they've spiced up a little motion in there. You know, some of those tight ends, like just using them, getting a little bit of leverage as the full outside receiver on motion plays, things like that. I thought it was a good Mike McCarthy game. Don't know if you know this, he's from Pittsburgh. We got that storyline. We got that storyline like 13 damn times on Sunday Night Football. And I get it was a delayed game. It wasn't exactly the spiciest game, but holy hell, do we know that Mike McCarthy is from Pittsburgh. So he really wanted to show off for the hometown crowd with all the little motions, things like that. We talked about the passing game on that show. We didn't talk as much about the run game. People have been getting more and more excited about Rico Dowdle in fantasy, but is this kind of a, hey, let's like cool our jets? Or is this like, what is the expectations for a player like Rico Dowdle?
Dowdle's just a fine talent. Like he's, I mentioned Van Pelt earlier being like a B-. Like that's him as a running back. So it's like, this is as good as it's going to get. Like that's how I picture him. Like this is him. Like this is how he's been since he's been in the league. I have interest in Rico too. I was trying to swoop him up once I realized Tony Pollard, you know, might be on the way out. Okay, maybe this is the guy. I just don't. His vision's just okay. His explosive playability just okay. Like it's not like he makes a ton of guys miss. At least eye test again. But this is where I'm like, yeah, he's just kind of a fine running back to me. He's a rotational back. that has to be the primary guy in this offense. That's why I think this becomes more of a split, or, you know, not maybe slash 50-50, but more of a 65-35, or Zeke's going to get some honorary touches too. That's kind of how he's there.
We can also barely put his shirt on. Did you see that? That like clipping from the locker room. So he's Zeke at this point of his career, and he's also a little banged up too.
I had a running back. We're talking about favorite running back prospects. We're talking about Bijan a couple years ago, Dane and I, and I was just reminiscing about Zeke and just him at Ohio State, because the question ended up being like, who was your favorite running back prospect the last decade? And you know, I like Saquon, but Saquon could be a little boom bust, you know, some of the stuff he did. And I thought Zeke was like the perfect running back. So like to see now, and I was with the Falcons when I was there, when he was coming out of Ohio State. So it's, I don't know if I'm sad, but it just does make me feel my age where I'm like, oh man, I watched your whole career now. Like he's a guy that is in my brain forever. I was like, this is one of the most talented players I've ever seen. And now I'm seeing this stage of his career. But what is interesting to me, and what you got to just follow the coaches sometimes. They do tell us more than sometimes I even realize. I just have to watch it. is that Hunter Lipke is the protection back now, not Zeke. Mm-hmm. And when I thought Zeke got brought back, that was his role no matter what. He's the check down back and the third down back. Dak trusts him completely. They're putting Lipke back there. And that's interesting to me, especially with politics and the offense and how the things, especially in Dallas.
Yeah,
Again, I'm just reading between the lines. You mentioned the routes. It's because he's out on the field on passing downs. Dak's never been shy to check it down. Dak will take those easy touches. So, yeah, he's just a guy. The math is starting to math for me with him and his touches and his role. So, like, that's another thing with Zeke being on the field for those plays and Lipke is. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, Rico feels like a guy who will hang around like in my rest of season rankings around like running back 25, 26, like probably a flex running back 3 type. I think the 20 carries for 80 yards and like fingers crossed he gets into the end zone is kind of like he profiles as that type of back. So that I think good level setting expectations for him. And yeah, like Lepke, if he continues to kick around in the passing game, that's always going to put a hard ceiling on any back. But I will say, at least just from my perspective, you know, I feel better about where the Cowboys are offensively coming out of that Steelers game, and just they're finding some, like you and I talked about yesterday, they're oh man, we're in trouble. Is all right, we'll just put CeeDee Lamb at X and we'll open things up for other players. And they're starting to get to that troubleshoot just right around the same time as they started doing that damn stuff last year.
Same time,
right around the same exact time.
It was week 5. They got throttled by the 49ers.
Yep.
And then it all was great after that.
They come out week 6 that year, and it's like, okay, we're putting CeeDee Lamb at X with the Chargers, and he gets 100 yards. And like,
it's
so
awesome.
We're right at that same spot again. And I do think, yeah, it's weird. I feel as if the season that we got out of Tony Pollard last year, which went down as a huge disappointment in fantasy because of where he was drafted, I feel like Rico could give us almost like a Bud Light version of that.
Yeah.
And Tony Pollard was still a top 15-ish back. And I feel like, again, Rico could maybe give us that season, but a guy like Lipke being involved in everything is going to keep him from being like a true every week fantasy starter. But there will be games where he's at least like this one, Lions, like they have a great run defense, but he definitely gonna have some shots at the end zone, because I think that that is going to be a high scoring game. So interesting with the Hunter Lipke stuff. He's definitely somebody people can keep an eye on there. Okay, let's get to saying the quiet part out loud, Nate. We have two wide receiver ones. I'm going to let you go first here.
All right. Quiet part out loud. All I'm going to say is Alec Pierce? ? That's all I got. Alec Pierce? He's alive? He's doing things? Like multiple weeks? Multiple catches? That's all I got.
Where do you think Alec Pierce ranks in receiving yards right now?
Oh, he's actually way up there, isn't he? 8th?
11th.
Okay.
So he ranks 11th in the NFL in catches. How many catches do you think, I'm an idiot. He ranks 11th in the NFL in receiving yards. How many catches do you think Alec Pierce has?
Oh, no, it's not a lot. It's like, doesn't he have like 10 catches on the year?
He has 13. You gotta get down to 21st in terms of the receiving yard rankings to get to another player that is below 15, and it's Jameson Williams with 13, and he's only played four games to Alec Pierce's to Alec Pierce's five. Again, you gotta go just to get to somebody below 15th. Once you get past friggin' Jameson Williams, I mean, dude, I'm scrolling down into the Rome Odunze at 50 in terms of receiving yards. So Alec Pierce is on a very interesting heater. 17 targets, 13 catches, 21.6 yards per target. Love not it. Yards per reception, yards per target. 21 yards per target. So you and I know we're like, hey, Pierce is interesting coming into the league, but he was kind of a limited guy, and that looks correct based on what he's done so far this year. They have a quarterback who can actually activate him, both in Richardson and Flacco. But this is, I think, the prescient kind of fantasy discussion to have about this, because, like, okay, so you said Alec Pierce is doing stuff. You probably don't think that role is going away. Michael Pittman is Michael Pittman. Josh Downs, I mean, is a freaking stud, dude. That guy is so good at football. He's just like a
steady Eddie.
I saw a Jetpack Galileo, great Twitter account, posted the clip of Josh Downs just running routes. Like, just basically said, Josh Downs versus slot defender is just a cheat code. Like, he's gonna roast every single slot defender in the league, big, small, doesn't matter. So all those guys are good, Nate. But it feels like from the fantasy world, we just keep saying, yeah, all those guys are good, but they're not, I don't think they're going to bench Anthony Richardson for Joe Flacco. It feels like the tenor and tone is, once Richardson gets back out there, like, all these guys are screwed. So what's the point of talking about them?
Yeah, it's Richardson's show. They really like him there. I just don't want anybody to ruin it for anybody. And it's not just me who likes him. It's the entire Colts franchise and organization. And once he's back healthy, and they take it cautious with him, with Richardson. He's still so young, and they're just, it's one of those things that he tried to, so I just talked to people there. He could have played in both weeks. You know, he could have came back from the hip pointer and could have played the next week. And there's just kind of like, well, what's the point? Like we don't want you to get hurt, and we trust Joe Flacco. So that's really what's all that's going on there. And maybe taking a deep breath will be really good for Richardson, because it did seem like he was, I actually thought he was seeing the game well. It was just the execution of getting a little too excited about what he was seeing, where he was like, oh, I read that blitz, bounce, sidearm shot, 10 yards over the guy's head. And it's like, all right, just chill. You'll be okay. So I think maybe this reset's going to help him out long term. Maybe, again, that's maybe an optimist about it. But I, like, for me, as that quarterback situation, like, Flacco can operate this. We just saw it last week, and he's going to chuck it, and he's accurate enough to get the downs, and he's going to chuck it to Pierce. AD Mitchell's another guy that they're kind of just slowly bringing along. Yeah. Downs coming in is going to help him out, because now he can take a deep breath. But why I wanted to bring up Pierce is that he has a defined role in this offense. Like, it's just, and this offense has two quarterbacks that are willing to throw it. I mean, he has two targets over 60 yards, or nearly 60 yards. Like, that's just insane. Like, this is like old Randy Moss target chart. Like, just throw it as deep as you can. You know, the offense needs Jonathan Taylor more than anything, because he really does help out the run game. The O-line is just, they're fine. They're good in the run game. The right tackle Smith just had awful game. Pass protection against Trayvon Walker. That's where Anthony Richardson comes in. But long-winded way to say, it's still Richardson's show. And I still, like, have, I don't know, I don't even know if you asked me, but I still have optimism in the passing game
I want you to sell me optimism here, because I love this receiver. I'm optimistic. Room. So, yeah.
And Steichen, I think, got a little cute early in the season with some of the stuff, but I think he's really honed in on that a little bit. So I think no matter if it's Flacco, it's a little less RPOs. They still run them, but it's going to be some more, you know, deep. It's going to be a lot of what they want to throw with Richardson, because they have similar throw styles, like, chuck it. So that's why I don't think the receivers will get dinged. It's just depending on Jonathan Taylor right back there. So I don't think any of the receivers you have to worry about. I think what we saw against the Jacksonville, maybe the second half, is kind of what we're going to expect. You know, they were missing so many guys in that game, so it's so hard to go like, this is the Colts. Like, I'm so, I can't get around on the Colts because they have a new cast of characters every freaking game. So it's just like, yeah, sure, sure. Okay, this is their team this week. So it's hard, but I don't think the passing game will get dinged at all, no matter who's the quarterback or the receivers, I should say.
That's sort of where I've also felt about the Colts is that, you know, Richardson starts the year, it's shaky, but he doesn't have Downs. And I just think Downs is that perfect quarterback settling wide receiver. Yeah, I really like A.D. Mitchell as a prospect. I think, and it was exciting to hear about them in camp, like, oh man, once Downs goes down, like, what if we throw A.D. Mitchell in the slot? Like, that could be exciting because his, like, movement skills, number one, I don't think that's the best position for him long term. I actually think the best position for him long term is X, but Alec Pierce is he's Alec Pierce. He's limited. A.D. Mitchell has more upside long term, but Alec Pierce is playing that role well right now. And you know, he's clearing that damn space out for these dudes underneath. So he's a sacrificial X that's also been getting his own bit sometimes here too. So like, you can't just take him off the field. It's just like, yeah, we love, and I know they love A.D. Mitchell. I know they're gassed up about Mitchell, but I think they wanted to get him on the field, but then you're doing the thing with the rookie receiver where we talked about CeeDee Lamb on Football 301. It's like, he is such a good player because he truly has a PhD at all three receiver positions.
Right.
Most dudes do not do that, especially dudes that are rookies coming from an offense at Texas where all he did was play vertical X receiver. So I think he was over, and the talent is there. You can see him separating things like that, but he was a little overloaded. So the fact that, like, that was what going on in the first part with Richardson, then Downs gets in there, then Richardson gets hurt, then Taylor gets hurt. It's like, I'm with you that I want to see, like, all these guys just kind of together and before we can really make a true judgment on it. But it just is, it is tough because the passing performances were so shaky with Richardson and the results were so hit or miss that, like, I want Downs. I think Downs could be an every week fantasy starter. I think Michael Pittman could be fine, maybe even get passed up by Downs. I think that's possible, but like,
I think they trust the Downs routes more than any Pittman get open routes right now. I think that's very real.
And it's just like, I want to get excited about those things, but I also want to be realistic about where Anthony Richardson is. So it's good to hear that you at least are still optimistic about this thing could come together.
I am. Maybe I was a year ahead on maybe the offensive optimism, but there's stretches where I'm like, oh my God, this is one of the best offenses in the league. And then there's stretches where I'm like, why are you guys doing that? Why did you throw it there, Anthony? But that's a young team. You also, when you look at so many skill guys are on rookie contracts, and like the one, Jonathan Taylor isn't, Pittman isn't, but like all the other guys are, like, that's a young team. They even look at the tight ends. That's a young team. So it usually you bet on post buy stuff. I think we already realized that they have a late buy, which is kind of disappointing. But again, sometimes when players get hurt, that's a little buy for them mentally. And then they don't have to practice and try something out. They can maybe just take a meeting, do a walkthrough, and go, oh, okay. And it clicks for them a little bit. But these guys are just so young that, it's going to be a little inconsistent.
Take a beat, see those layups are there, and start taking them, Anthony Richardson. Yeah, it's tough sledding for them defensive-wise. They get the Titans, Dolphins, Texans, Vikings, Bills, Jets, Lions, Patriots, and then that week 14 bye. All right, I'll give my saying the quiet part out loud take before we take our final break. I think Drake London is going to lead the NFL in catches this year. Maybe that's not that spicy. He is third.
I love it.
In terms of wide receivers and receptions right now with 32. Malik Neighbors is number one with 35. He's actually, Neighbors still in concussion protocol as of Wednesday. So that sucks. That's not great.
Still on Wednesday. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That means he'll probably miss. That's
kind of not ideal.
The math of that. Not ideal at all.
Yeah. He's considered day to day, remains in concussion protocols with a report I just saw. So, we'll see about that. You know, they were testing the limits of wide receiver workload there in New York, but, on the Drake London stuff. And I know you and I love Drake London, and I think
still do.
I'm gonna speak for you on this, and you can tell me if I'm speaking out of turn on this. How they used him on Thursday Night Football, and I get it. The Bucs secondary stinks. Like it's just they're undermanned. There's injuries, and when you're already an aggressive defensive coordinator, and you're playing all that zone coverage behind all those blitzes, and you're going against a veteran quarterback like Kirk Cousins, who has been there, seen it, done it. All of it for freaking 10 years now. Like, he can tear that stuff apart. I get that matchup induced totally. Still, out of the slot, Drake London, 9 targets, 8 catches, 117 yards, and his touch a touchdown. Like, finally, man, I've been saying this all year. Like, if you go back and look at the Drake London alignment data, go to receptionperception.com, look at the Drake London alignment data from his first two seasons. It's all perimeter X receiver stuff. And, like, London can win there because he's a good route runner, but his natural position to me is as a power slot, or at least like the Puka Nacua type of, we're splitting 60-40 outside slot, but we're getting you off the ball. We're getting you in motion. And man, those plays have been there all year. Like, the alignment has been there. The motion has been there. The usage has been there for London from a deployment perspective. We finally just started seeing, hey, Kirk Cousins, take the throws. Like, those are open over the middle to London, and he knew that those were going to be there, and he just peppered him in the slot because that allows him to get yards after catch. It allows him to be that big body. Like, he could be a better, almost like a better version of Michael Pittman, I think, is a good Drake London comp, like the souped up version of that, somewhere between the Michael Pittman Puka Nacua type of player. You know, obviously I think like Michael Thomas was like the peak of this archetype because they would use him at X, but they would do like the power slot
route, all the choice routes from the slot.
So, and like, London could be closer, I think, to the peak of that archetype. So I just feel like, seeing that usage there, he's targeting 45% of his routes from the slot. Like, it's just, they didn't get him there all the time. They're not going to make him like a 90% slot player or something like that. But when he's in there, take those matchups, hit those throws. And if they do, like, he really could compete for, I don't know, like 120 plus catches this year.
No, I love this. And not, they're going to be chucking it. they're not shy to do it, even though they got Bijan and Algier and all that. Cousins is seeing the game great. You know, we got Kirktober going on right now. It's the thing. Vikings fans are sure to remind anyone that's going like, hey, Kirk looks really good right now. They're like, it's Kirktober. That's what that's what's going on. I mean, we've talked about it plenty of times. Huge fan of London's game. The power slot thing was always where I saw him. Someone compared him, and I'm sorry, I'm not giving the proper credit here. Someone compared him to Cooper Kupp coming out, and I was like, ha-ha. And then now I'm watching him as a pro, and I'm like,
huh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, all right. I kind of see that role. Like, Cooper Kupp is always, no one realizes that he's 6'2", 210.
Yeah.
Like, it's still the funniest thing. Everyone thinks that he's a 5'11
slot white guy. He's big. There's a reason he's like chipping pass rushes before he goes out to reps
and holds
on the flat.
Up. Yeah. No, he's a big guy. And so London, that's his thing. He's a big body. He is so good with the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
I don't have his missed tackle or broken tackle once. And I remember looking it up, and it wasn't as impressive as you would think. But watching him, the first guy rarely brings him down because he's so good throwing guys by. And yeah, it's not picking up 30 yards and taking it to the house, but it's those 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards, 2 yards. He's just always getting those yards after the catch. I think what you just said, you spelled it out perfectly. I think they figured out, like, oh, okay, this is how we use you. You even look at the route chart from against Tampa Bay. I sent it to Colin, so YouTubers can check it out. But it's slot inbreakers, slot inbreakers, slot inbreakers. And it's just, that's probably choice routes, slants, all that type of stuff. That's ideal for him. He's a big body who can get yards. He's not scared to go over the middle. He's got a huge catching range. I think maybe when they get to certain other teams, he is going to be the primary focus, and not Darnell Mooney, who is still playing well. Like, holy crap. I'm fine being wrong on that take. It's like, all right, sure. I guess Darnell Mooney's got this in his game if you target him every play. But I do think that they have figured out London a little bit, especially they're figuring out the offense, like a lot of new quarterbacks and all OCs and all that type of stuff. But I love this take because I think there's a definite path to it, especially if they get some more screens to him and realize those. No, he's got some Godwin in his game where he catches those screens. He can get the kind of simple yards north of, we're just bringing up every power slot possible.
Totally.
Who else could I bring in here? Oh, it's like a late career Larry Fitzgerald. You know,
yeah, like a little like Amon-Ra St. Brown flavor to him, you know?
All the USC receivers, Pittman, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Drake London, and they couldn't do anything with them. I liked all of them as prospects, too. I think watching him, I think this is a great take because I think the usage is kind of, they're honing in on how to properly use them, and it's just, there's going to be games where it's like, okay, there is more Mooney, but I think that Bucs game felt more like, okay, this is the formula that's working for us.
Yeah, it's always important to pay attention to how the teams actually perform when they use the players that way. And that was a pretty good game for them. First 2 years for Drake London. Again, this is in reception perception. So the games I charted, 86% outside as a rookie, 85% on the line. In 2023, 78% outside, 82.4% on the line. Like, I guarantee you when those numbers come in for this year, it's going to be like maybe 60, and then like the off the ball snaps are going to be way up. So good usage for Drake London. I definitely think is going to be a smash the rest of the way. Okay, let's take our final break. Talk about a pretty important Thursday night football game here, Nate Tice, right after this. All right, we're back. Nate, pretty important Thursday night football game. As I mentioned, we got the 49ers at the Seahawks. Seahawks are number one in the division. The 49ers are kind of, I'm not going to say reeling at 2-3, but certainly don't want to be sitting here at 2-3 coming into week six. The over-under in this game is 49. The 49ers are 3.5-point road favorites. So, Nate, on this game, what do we think? I mean, look, it's definitely a big-name fantasy game, that's for sure. Beyond the obvious players, anything else stand out here to you?
Yeah, I just want to see, it's a struggling 49ers defense a bit, especially against the run, versus a Seahawks offense that has some really good moments, but also has, you know, had an interesting game against the Giants. Giants defense coming into their own. I might want to retake that. I don't know how to phrase this.
You want to buy back maybe some takes you were selling?
Yeah. I had the take. I sold it, mostly all of it, and I want to buy a little bit back. I want to rebuttal my rebuttal. Rectify that. The 49ers defense, we talked about this yesterday, struggled on football 3-1, struggle with big bodies. The Seahawks want to be more 11 personnel because those are better players. So that's one advantage that I'm curious if they trot out their tight ends just to get the 49ers to try and match. So it might be a Kenneth Walker game as far as rushing yards, maybe catch, but the 49ers are interesting is that they're allowing a lot of successful runs, but no explosive runs. Mm-hmm. What's Kenneth Walker's whole game is runs, the boom bust running back. So that's interesting to me that it's like, wow, I do think Kenneth Walker can get there, but it's not his game. Like he's going to have to be a steady Eddie. So is that a Charbonnet game? Like, is that, I don't know. I'm trying to find his rushing. I can't
57.5 is the over under for Kenneth
Walker.
That's
scary to me. Because I don't know if he could bust break one off. So maybe bet under there.
I was thinking about that. I'm glad you have the courage to say it because I was kind of thinking.
We haven't done an under bet yet.
I know. Yeah. And it's so scary against a team that does get gashed by the run. But yeah, it's like, I mean, 57.5 for Kenneth Walker. I could see the under being in play because they're not the type of team. Like the Cardinals are the type of team that's going to give the 49ers problems in the run game. But it's like a spread and shred type of attack, which I do think it's on my radar that I think Kenneth Walker's a great back and he's obviously could be super productive and effective, but I don't know that he's like the ideal back for this like shotgun spread team that they are from a pass perspective. So I could see that being a little bit that oil and water effect. It's not going to happen every game, but I could see it happening in this game.
Yeah, I know. It's almost want Kenneth Walker with like the Patriots as like they're too bad. Yeah. Like, so it's Stevenson and him. So you have the steady Eddie and then you have the guy that can burn like something like that. No, that's a great point. It's that a bad run defense he's going to be good against because he can just gash them all this. And it's so hard to go, oh, the 49ers don't have a great run defense, but it's like against this, they do. Against these looks, they kind of do. So I've been looking at maybe some Jaxon Smith-Njigba stuff. Mm-hmm. That's another one too. He's coming along. I mean, they're peppering him. He's going to have kind of steady catches kind of, I think, no matter what it is. So that's one that maybe I'm looking at too, is where they have to attack underneath over and over and over. Geno has to spread it out. They have to get into these empty formations. So it might be like a receptions over.
Yeah. The only thing about that is it's 4.5 for JSN.
4.5
minus
3.5.
Minus 145 though. So it's like,
God dang it. I just saw it too.
Yeah. That's why I kind of thought that it looked like if we're saying receptions, can he pop like one of these, maybe the over on 47.5 for Jaxon Smith-Njigba, just because they do still have good perimeter coverage. Although I don't know if you saw DK Metcalf talking like, yeah, this is the 1 year, like, I'm not scared of going against that defense. He basically said that. I'm paraphrasing, but like, he's like, yeah, I'm not worried about it. Like this year watching them on film, which is nice little bit of talking from DK Metcalf there. But, and I mean, he's playing.
They've won games against them. Like, why are you talking They've got like beat up by the 49ers for like years now, so it's not really
maybe not great, but I do think the JSN over on 47.5, just because I would love to do receptions, but it's just like -145.
That's not juicy. Yeah,
what's the point?
I know this is a tough one, and division matchups Thursday games are always you know, you can always, what's Jason Jordan, I almost said Jordan Taylor. Oh my god,
where's Jordan Mason?
Yeah, I would say Jordan Taylor. I said Jason because it was Jordan Mason. He's at 1.5 receptions too. Like, because the Seahawks linebackers you can get after two. So these types of games, is it a tight end and a running back game? McDonald has been more zone, which is also can lead you to what the 49ers are going to target. But again, it's just
typically those zone heavy defenses are like, those are Debo games, not IU
Debo games, right?
So
yes, and man to man is the IU games. Yes, so it's more maybe the Debo stuff, and then maybe again they're trying to find explosive plays in this offense. His rushing yards is at 13.5, so that's another one that's like, does he pop one as they try to get into, they're trying to find more explosives in the run game, the 49ers are, and Mason is more of a doubles hitter, a singles hitter. And so maybe this is their way that they manufacture one. It's at 13.5 over under rushing yards. They have been finding ways to still get him in the backfield, get him touches. So maybe this is a way that they add some juice in the run game. So that's another one too, where I'm kind of betting the human element of the scheme there, where it's like, hey, we need a juice here. We need juice here. That's a way. So look for Debo overs as well.
Yeah, 52.5 receiving yards for Debo Samuel. Kind of like that. His catches actually at over 4.5 is only -105. That actually might be the direction to go with his. And then I do, again, to bring the JSN thing back, the 49ers give up 11.9 yards per attempt to slot receivers. That is the most in the league. So definitely I think JSN could be in play in this one.
Cardinals are a good offense to watch, as sometimes there's defenses like this, like Lou Anarumo was like this a little, or Mike McDonald on defenses like this, Lions offenses like this. I want to see how they attack this problem. So that is, the Cardinals are a great example of this right now, their offense. So who do they attack? What do they do? Bunch of tight ends, pound the rock, zone read a little bit, you know, with Kyler in there because Bosa gets a little antsy, and then Pepper stuff, you know, get Dortch in there, move guys, Michael Wilson inside, play action shots. So they give guys, other teams, good, you know, blueprints to go off of. But I just, that's my, I have to keep the streak going where I mentioned the Cardinals. So I think I do have to say though, but they, that's what's interesting that you just mentioned the slot stuff. So that's where, what led to me, my JSN thought, because they are trying to get him going too. So kind of an ideas converging kind of thing. Also, the 49ers got some DB. Hufanga got hurt again. Mm-hmm. Malik Mustafa. I like him a lot as a prospect, and he had some nice moments against the Cardinals. Also had some bad moments. But two, coverage is not his strong suit. He's more of a run and hit guy. Yeah. So again, that's tight ends, that's running backs in the pass game. So again, that's something I'm keeping my eye on if I find a line that I like.
Love it. A lot of different angles to cover in this game, and definitely just feels like a start your guys in fantasy in this game for sure.
This should be an enjoyable football game. As I point at my TV, because that's where I'll be watching it. Yeah. It's gonna be an enjoyable game.
Who do you think wins? You don't have to, nothing against the spread. Who do you think wins the game?
But I think it's the Niners.
Yeah, me too.
It's just the Seahawks right now. Just don't. I like a lot of the ideas that they have, but I don't think right now, week six, they don't have enough to get them. Maybe in the rematch, they'll have a shot. But yeah, I think the Niners need this win more too.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Nate, anything on the site? I know you got the CJ Stroud article coming. Anything else people should check out?
In that article, it's a three-parter. I love the season going along because now I get to narrow in my focus, and it's a lot more fun. So CJ Stroud is really good. The Broncos defense is really good. And then Garrett Nussmeier, the quarterback at LSU, I'm going to do kind of like a little mini breakdown of him. LSU plays Ole Miss, you know, on Saturday, which should be a really good game. Both are ranked pretty high, I think both in the top 12 or 14. So, but Nussmeier is he's making the case for my QB1 on my updated big board.
There we go.
I don't know if I'm all the way there yet, but I'm excited to watch this game, and I wanted to talk about him before he probably nukes himself on national TV, and everyone just goes, you just talked about this guy for like four shows in a row? Really? You? Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's how it works. It's great.
That's
They're probably Commanders fans too.
Your favorite. your favorite people on planet Earth right now. Well, definitely make sure to check out Nate's article. If not, just I've been talking about that Broncos defense. Definitely go listen to somebody smarter than me talk about it. So definitely read Nate's article there. Like I said, that is going to do it for us today. Reminder, little heads up to the people out there. Yahoo Fantasy Basketball is back for the 2024-2025 season. If you hate your fantasy football team already, and I know many of you do, I mean, this Nico Collins thing is breaking my heart. Or Nico Collins' injury might be hurting me enough to push me away from the rest of the fantasy football season. Obviously not. I'm being facetious. But if it's got you so broken down that you need to just think about a different fantasy sport, Yahoo Fantasy Basketball, it's back. Go create or join a private league with friends, or join a public league to show the world your fantasy skills and how, hey, you got unlucky this year in football with injuries. Go play basketball. To sign up, visit yahoo.com/fantasybasketball. On Friday, this show will be back, not talking about fantasy basketball, but Tara Roberts and Andy Behrens will join me to preview all of Sunday's Week 6 action. Until then, we're out.